You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
But anyway, I've got a hard hat on, and it is a blue hard hat. Can you hear me? Because I sound really weird. Am I coming through the system? It's just my ears. Okay, because there's a hat on my head that I don't usually wear. But I'm wearing a blue hat, and according to Mr. Donald Walters Jr. Anyway, according to him, it's Standard Steel. Anybody else work at Standard or have been there at Standard or anything like that? Y'all know where that is, right? It's over in Burnham. A little bit, you know, we've got a little history here in Lewistown with that place. But according to that, can I tilt my head? Yeah. There are different helmets that people wear that work there. There are different types of hats that they wear. You've got blue, and a blue hat is a transportation guy. So somebody wearing a blue hat is transportation. So when you see a blue hat, you know that I guess you can, at the very least, jump on their back, and they will take you somewhere. I don't quote me on that, but that's what I'm guessing. So if you see some guy wearing a blue hat, just jump on their back, and I'm sure they won't mind one bit. Then there's brown, and brown means that they work at the wheel mill. And I'm talking completely, like some of these words, I don't even know what they mean. But a brown person, a brown hat works in the wheel mill. Then a yellow hat works in the melt shop, which seems appropriate. And if you see their hat as melted, then run. that's that. Orange is machine shop. So if someone wearing an orange hat, it means their job is to work in the machine shop. And of course, these are to protect you and keep you safe and all that. Black, and I don't even know what this means, but oh, I guess I kind of do with noise. Okay, is AFM, which is the axle forging mill. So those are the people that forge axles in the mill. I know these things. I've got a master's degree. Gray hat is utilities. So the as opposed to everybody else being useless, these guys, oh no, that would be use. Okay. Anyway, utilities. So these guys work the utilities. Then red is maintenance, which I understand is you, right, DJ? You're a red hat guy. And so maintenance, they do things that are related to maintenance. And then gold, if you see a gold hat at Standard Steel, that means they're a visitor. So I guess, you know, that you can, you know, if you're an important dignitary or an important visitor to Standard Steel, this doesn't fit my head, then you'd be wearing a gold hat. But here's the deal. All of those people, that's just their hats. They're kind of normal, everyday average Joes, or Dons, or DJs, or whatever you want to be, average, whatever. But if you see a white hat means that they're a supervisor. And a white hat means that if you see that hat, they are the person, and I asked DJ about this ahead of time, they're the person that can fire you on the spot. They have the authority and the power to do that. But a white hat, if you are working at Standard Steel and you see any other hat, okay, that's great. You know, again, if you see a blue hat, jump on their back and all that good stuff. But if you see a white hat, you need to make sure at that moment that you are doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Because they're the boss. They're the authority. They're the leaders. They're the ones that, again, that at that moment they have the authority. If they feel like you're being negligent enough, they could, as he put it, they could escort you to the gate. They can escort you to the gate and get rid of it. So the white hat is a very serious symbol. And anybody that works there, again, I wouldn't have known this until DJ and I talked about this the other day, but anybody else that works there would know right away, white hat, big deal. And I understand that they're referred to as white hats. Oh, hey, there's a white hat in the area. So a white hat is a sign of authority. And here's the thing. You could choose as a blue hat or brown hat or yellow hat to not really care and to completely disobey the white hat. And if you choose as a yellow hat or a blue hat to disobey the white hat, you will very shortly be a no hat. Okay? Because you will be out without a hat. Here's the deal. This is a symbol of authority. Now, the person that is wearing the hat, and I'm just going to guess on this, but I'm guessing that people that wear white hats are human. Is that the case? Well, some of them are. Okay. but for the most part, the people that wear the white hat are human. It's not the person that's as much of the issue as the hat that doesn't fit, that they're wearing. So, you know, right now I'm transportation. Now I'm suddenly authority. And actually, this was a painted hat because, for obvious reasons, DJ couldn't just walk out of standard with a white hat. But a white hat is a symbol of authority. And you, as a Standard Steel employee, better pay attention and do what you're told when you're around a white hat. You can choose to do what you want. You can choose to disobey. You can choose to fight the authority. But the authority is always going to win. And so I want to talk to you about this morning, and we're going through this series, Declaration, looking at some things that kind of make us a country. You know, they're not like all in the Constitution or anything like that. But obviously last week we talked about the importance when it comes to voting and to choosing. We talked about culture, and we can't let culture sway our opinion. We need to go back to Scripture. We need to go back to what God says, what God's Word says. And so today I want to talk about this idea of defiance, this idea of rebellion, this idea of authority. Because there are some things here that, and I told you from the beginning, this series might be a little controversial. It might be uncomfortable for you. It might be things that you don't want to think about. But they're real. They're biblical issues. And so I want to talk about this idea. But here's the point that I want you to walk away with today. And that's this. Authority. Any authority is God-given for our submission. Authority. White hat. Anybody in authority has been given by God for us to submit to. Authority is God-given for our submission. And this is not a very popular idea. Depending on how things turned out for you Tuesday night, or Wednesday morning if you went to bed early, you know, you might have some problems with this. But we need to realize something. And maybe you don't have any problems with this. But we need to realize that no matter if we're talking about president or if we're talking about your boss who happens to wear a white hat, if you're talking about your parents, if you're talking whatever it may be, that the authorities that are over us are God-given for our submission. We need to pay attention and respect the white hat, the white hats that are in our lives. I want to look at a passage in Romans chapter 13, and it was kind of crazy. This series, we sat down, and this is November, so we sat down in September and talked about what we were going to teach this month. And wouldn't you know, on Wednesday the 13th, or Wednesday, yeah, after the election day, Romans 13 popped up all over the place on Facebook. So I wasn't, it's kind of neat that we're relevant. I kind of figured that we would be relevant since everything we're talking about is relevant. But all I have to say, I want to look at Romans 13. So if you have your Bible, yeah, that's what I'm rambling on. If you have your Bible, open to Romans chapter 13. If not, YouVersion app, you can go to Romans, click on 13 for the chapter, and then we're going to start at verse 1, so you can just go right there from the beginning. I've also got it on the screen. I'm reading from the NIV. I'll give you some background here. This is a letter. It's in the book of Romans. And it's a letter written by a guy named Paul. We've talked about Paul before. But he was writing this. He was a missionary. He was a church planner. And he started churches all around the known world at the time. And one of those churches he started in Rome. And we know Rome. You know, that's that place with Italy, which is the boot-kicking Sicily. And so he started a church in Rome. And so now later, he's writing a letter back to this church, to the Romans in this church. And so he's telling them some different things, and he talks about all sorts of issues in there. But one of the things he talks about is here in chapter 13 of Romans, beginning of verse 1. He says, "Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God." He's being a little redundant there in case you're a little thick and you don't get it. "There is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God." Then he goes on and says, "Consequently," and it's cut off a little bit there, sorry. "Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and you will be commended. For the one in authority is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid." Be very afraid. "For rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servants, agents of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoers. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also as a matter of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes. For the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give to everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor." And there's a parallel passage we're going to look at a little bit later in 1 Peter, where Peter talks about this same topic. But there are authorities all in our lives. And there's white hats all around us. Some of you are white hats. Some of you have multiple white hats. As Kirk said, you know, many of you are white hats at home. You're a parent. You're an authority figure. Some of you are white hats in your job. Some of you are white hats here at church. Some of you have, you know, I don't know, even more white hats. Some of you, sometimes you're wearing a white hat and sometimes you trade it off because you're under authority. But I want to talk about this idea of leadership and then talking about this idea of authority and what God has in mind here. And sorry about that. I'm having a staticky kind of day. So I want to look at this passage real quick, just in terms of leading the way. Again, Paul was writing this to the church in Rome. Now, you need to understand this about the church in Rome. Okay, does anybody know who was in authority over pretty much the known world at this time? If you were here for the Word series last summer, we talked about this. Who was in charge of all the people? What nation? What conquering empire? Anybody? Rome! Yeah, Rome. Rome was in charge. And so Rome ran the whole empire, and they weren't just called Rome because they're like, hey, that rhymes with that city there. It's because that's where they were based. And so Paul is writing to Christians, to Christ's followers, to the church that is in Rome, and Rome is the center of everything that most people didn't like at the time because they were an empire. They were an empire which is ruled by an emperor, which means that person that was there wasn't voted on. That person there wasn't even necessarily there because, hey, it makes the most sense. Most likely it's because they killed somebody to get there. And so here, at this time, Paul is writing to a church that is right in the heart of the Roman Empire, in the city of Rome. Right, you know, Caesar is probably living like right up the hill there. And he says this to them about submitting, about authority, and about God putting them there. So I want you to understand that this isn't just some guy who like lives in the backwoods of Perry County or something, and it's like, hey, you know what? We don't have to worry about them. No, them coppers, them people don't come around here. Like, I don't know. That's why people talk in Perry County, I guess. But he's talking to people that are right in the midst of this. Okay, this is a reality for them. So there's three things I want to show you. First of all, is that God chooses our leaders. God chooses our leaders. God chooses our leaders. God chooses our leaders. I just want you to get that. Because I know that there was a lot of people, that were disappointed on Wednesday. My guy didn't win. You don't know who my guy is, but he didn't win. Neither did the Giants on Sunday to the Steelers team. Nor did Penn State yesterday. So I've had the trifecta of loss this week, okay? But it's a new week now, so we're all good. Anyway, why do I get off this subject? God chooses our leaders. He is the one that did this. He is the one that has put every leader in place. And that's exactly what he says. Paul writes, and if we want to flip back to the verse there in verse 1, he says that God, the authorities that exist, have been established by God. God chooses our leaders. God has chosen every leader in our life. Whether you like it or not, God has chosen our leaders. And that's what the kids are getting in ignition right now. They're going to walk out. Whether we like it or not, God has placed the leaders in our lives. No matter, he didn't ask for our opinion. And that's probably a good thing. Because I make poor choices. The things I think are good end up not being so good. And so God, he has chosen the leaders that we have in our lives. And he has put them there. From our president, to your boss, to your parents, to your teachers, to your supervisor, to our governor, to our mayor, to your pastor. God has put these people in your life. God has chosen them. And the really cool thing in here, and I often throw out Greek words, and it's not to make me sound all smart and awesome, okay? Well, maybe a little. No. But I don't want you for I don't ever want you to walk out of here saying, well, I don't know. I don't have Greek. I guess I can't read my Bible. That is not my goal by any means. But sometimes when you try to translate things, they don't always translate over. For example, there's a word in Spanish that is embarazada. And embarazada sounds like, oh, you're embarrassed. You'd be embarrassed if you said you're embarazada because it means you're pregnant. So things don't quite translate all the time. And so that's the only reason I want to share this with you. But the interesting thing about the Greek word for authority, it says, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. The authority word there is a Greek word. It's exousia. And I probably didn't pronounce that right, but that's okay. You're good with that. But the word means not just boss, but it actually means permission. The word means permission. So the governing ones that have been given permission. Basically, what this is saying, what Paul is writing here by using that word is that these aren't people that randomly made their way to the top. These aren't people that have been up in that position. These are people that God has permitted. He is allowing them to do that. If God said no, then boom, permission denied, no authority. And that's what he's saying here, that the authorities that exist have been granted by God. It's permission. And the word established is another Greek word. It means hypo. It's hypo. And it says, there is no authority except that which God has established. And it actually means under. And so, hey, kind of ties in with our declaration series. But there is no authority except that which is under God. That's exactly what he's saying there. There is no one who has been given permission, if you want to go that way, except that which is under God. See, God has placed all the leaders that we have. They are under that. They are under our under his authority. He has put them there. He has decided where they are. He has decided why they're there. And we'll talk about that in a second. But you just need to get that idea, first of all, is that there's no accidents. There isn't an issue of, oh, man, if only 7,000 more people voted, or, oh, man, how did they get that position? They must have bribed the right person to get to that position at work. Oh, they must have just walked in and stolen a white hat. But understand that there is no one in authority that God hasn't permitted, that God hasn't chosen to be there. And we'll talk about that, some implications about that, but I need you to get that. God was just as in control on Monday of this country as he was on Wednesday, as he is today. Nothing happened, nothing slipped by, and I'm not trying to make a statement against Obama. I'm just saying nothing changed. And if Romney was president or Johnson was president, it doesn't matter. God is just as sovereign, just as in control on Monday as he was on Wednesday. And God is working. God has got it in his hands, and we need to get that. That God chooses our leaders. There's no one there except that which has been established by God. The problem is, we can't always see that. We can't always see, like, what is going on? Why is God doing this? And again, don't miss that I'm just talking about our president. You might be in work, and like, God, why? How did they get to that position? They're not even human. Like, what in the world? And you need to understand that God put them there. And we don't know why. We don't get the whole picture. And I've shared this illustration with you before. When I was in college, I led a missions trip to New York City, to Manhattan. And I took a bunch of Lancaster people. It was over spring break. So the only people that usually went on these mission trips were the international students who couldn't get home because they lived in some other country, or often the rural students that just didn't want to leave, that were local to Lancaster. And so here I am taking a group of people that have never been in a major city, either because they live in Zimbabwe or because they live in central Pennsylvania, and you get into downtown Manhattan, and it's crazy. I mean, it's a crazy place. There's traffic, taxis, running. And I remember one of the students, I showed this before, one of the students walking across the street, like, wow, look at those big buildings. And there's like a taxi flying at them. Like, oh, they'll stop. I'm a pedestrian. Pedestrians have to, they have to yield, right? Yeah, right. Anyway, it was crazy. And if you've ever been to Manhattan, it's a crazy place. Traffic, people. I took Kendra there. Well, I was going to propose to her at the top of the Empire State Building when we got engaged. I'm glad I didn't because I decided to go on Black Friday to Manhattan. There were a lot of people there. It was a crazy, crazy place. It was really cool to see like the Macy's parade thing still on the ground, the ticker tape and all that cool stuff. But it was a crazy place, and there was actually like a 3-hour wait to get your ticket and then like a 4-hour wait to get to the top of the building. So it probably would have thrown a crimp into my plans. We did end up going to Les Mis on Broadway. Second row seats. That was her birthday present. That was when we had money. A single guy, you know how it is. What's my point? Oh, crazy. Manhattan is crazy. There's lots of people. And when we were on this mission trip, one of the days we actually got to go to the top of the Empire State Building. And at the top of the Empire State Building, it's a very, very different story. It's a little windy. But as you look down, all that chaos, all the horns and the sirens and the gunshots and the noise, like, it's not there. You can't hear any of that. But all you can see as you look down is just an ordered, patterned city with roads that go this way and roads that go this way. And you see cars moving in the right directions and moving in the right directions. And all of a sudden, from that view, all that chaos, all that disorder makes perfect sense. And see, that's I'm just throwing out that God has chosen our authorities. And so we might not get it. It might not make sense. But he knows what he's doing. He's working things out. He understands your boss. He understands your mom. He gets those things. God has put them there. The second thing I want you to understand is God chooses our leaders. God uses our leaders. God doesn't just say, okay, you're in charge. Good luck. Hope it works out for you. In Romans, Paul says that God uses our leaders to accomplish his purposes. And he says, whoever rebels against the leaders is rebelling essentially against God, because God is using them to work things out. Whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. And later he goes on and says, the one in authority is God's servant. God isn't just putting people in charge and just saying, have fun, go at it. He is putting people in charge because he is working something out. He is doing something. And that something might not be what we like. It might be something that we go through that's painful for the time, but in the end, it's going to work out. A friend of mine recently had his wisdom teeth removed. I'm sure the process, well, it was a lot happier than he expected, but I'm sure the process was a good thing, even though it was painful, to get the impacted wisdom teeth out. Sometimes we go through pain because the intended result is better. And so sometimes God might be doing things that are hard. Sometimes things are good, and I don't mean that everything's going to be awful. But just understand that God is using them in that position and using them for different things. And when we're rebelling against a leader, we're rebelling against what God is trying to do. Because we think we know our way better than God's way. And I understand the people that wear the white hats, they're human. And again, we're going to talk about this in a little bit. But just for now, understand that when you choose to disobey, when you choose to rebel against authority, whatever level that is, you're rebelling against God. You're going against what God has set in place. And sometimes it doesn't make sense. And he says, if you want things to be easy, obey the leaders. But he said, if you disobey, the leaders are there. They're going to use the sword. They're going to bring down the hammer. They're going to cause some problems in your life if you're choosing to disobey them. But he says, they are God's servants. And the crazy thing here is, and if you grew up in church, you might know this word, but the word deacon, some churches have deacons. The word that is servant there is deacon. So the authority, the leader in your life that you hate, is God's deacon. God is using them. They're his servant. And so I need you to understand that. And the thing is, we don't always, it says here that sometimes God, that the leader will do things that are good. And if you do what is right, you'll be commended and things go well. Sometimes you'll disobey and things will go bad and we don't know why. And I just want to share a little bit of history here for you with Israel, because Israel had some leaders that did some pretty bad things. If you remember when we did the Word series again back in July, that the nation had completely turned away from God. Judah was no longer following his ways. They had a bad king after bad king after bad king. And we talked about this last week. They wanted to have a king in the first place. He says, fine, here you go. They had a bad king after bad king. And finally God said, that's enough. And so the nation of Babylon grew to the point where they took over the entire known land at the time. And they took the nation of Judah out of the city of Jerusalem and took them and brought them to Babylon so that they were in captivity. They were in prison for 70-some years. And it was not a pleasant time. It was an awful time for the nation of Israel because they lost their land, and that was a big deal to them. They lost their temple. That was a huge deal to them. That's how they worshiped God. And God took them. He used these Babylonians, people that did not care about God at all. Understand that. The Babylonians weren't like, we love you, Jesus. They were bad people. They used to sacrifice children regularly as part of their worship. The Babylonians were bad people, and God used the bad people to do a bad thing to Israel. And yet in those 70 years, the people repented and realized, wow, look how far away from God we have gotten. And so God used a bad nation to do a bad thing to those people to draw them back to him. Later, the Babylonians, they were a very large empire, and we talked about this in the Word series too. In between what we call the intertestamental period, from the end of your Old Testament to the beginning of your New Testament, there were some major shifts in the global empire. Because Babylon was kind of in charge, and then at the end of the 70 years, another nation came in, and they took over, and they were the reigning people, the Persians. They were the ones in charge. And then, between the Old Testament and the New Testament, the Greeks then took over. And this guy named Alexander, he was above average. He was great. Alexander the Great, that was funny, come on. I said it like 5 times. You're like, that joke was funny like 8 years ago when you told it the first time. Anyway, Alexander the Great, he takes over and like squashes things and messes up the religion. And what he was doing was teaching it and forcing everybody to learn one single language, Koine Greek. The Greeks taught these people this common language, so everybody they conquered had to learn the same language. And so then the Greeks were getting bigger and bigger. Well, then this other empire got bigger and bigger called the Romans. And the Romans came along and squashed the Greeks. And then in the process made everybody subject to them. Again, the Israelite people, they hated it. Things were really rough for the nation of Israel. And one of the things that the Romans did was develop roads. The roads were what they were well known for, their engineering and designing roads. And so as the Israelites looked at it, as the world looked at it, like, man, we went from bad to Greeks, which was worse, to the Romans, which were even worse, because the Caesars were pretty bad. And yet God was doing something, because he said, you know what? When the fullness of time came, right when time was right, as I'm getting things ready, I want to send a Savior to the world. And the best way to spread that message is so that everybody, what if everybody spoke the same language? Then I could communicate it easily. And what if we had roads so that we could get that message out to everybody? And so while the world was looking at this awful thing, these leaders in charge, these authorities, the Greeks screwing everything up, and the Romans coming along and screwing that up, God was working. He was putting things together in place because he had a message to send. He had a message to spread, to tell to the world of Jesus. And so when we look at things and we say, wow, man, God's lost control or whatever, what's going on? We need to recognize that God is doing stuff and we can't see it. God has put the authorities. He's using the leaders in our lives, even when we don't get it. And so that's nice, right? That first thing, oh, God chooses our leaders. We love that God's in control because that's good. Even when things seem out of control, we love that God is using our leaders. We love that God is taking the white hats and using them. This next one we don't like so much. And it's funny because most of the people that quoted this on Facebook, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of the people that quoted this on Facebook stopped before we got to this next section of Romans 13. And it says this. Oh, well, the idea is that God expects our submission. God expects us to submit to the authorities over us. He expects us to fall in line. And that's what it says in verses 5 to 7. He says, therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities. Not only because of possible punishment, but also as a matter of conscience. See, what he's saying there is that you need to submit to the authorities because, as he just shared, you know, if you don't follow them, things are going to go bad for you. They're not bringing the sword for nothing. They're not going to bring down the hammer for nothing. So don't just submit to them. Don't just obey them just so life is good. He says also just because of conscience, because that's what makes you a Christ follower. He says submit just because it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. It's like instant Quaker oatmeal, Wilford Brimley. It's the right thing to do. You guys remember that commercial, 80s? Anyway, it's necessary to submit to the authorities. God expects it. God chooses the leaders. He uses the leaders. And here's the thing about this. This, therefore, he says at the beginning of the passage, he says, everybody, everyone. There's really no room for your opinion. And that's hard. Because our opinion comes, well, I would if they... I would obey, but there... And so we kind of find some sort of cop-out, some excuse not to submit to the authorities God has placed over us. Well, I mean, dude, the white hat guy, I know I'm supposed to obey him, I'm supposed to do what he says, but the guy, he's just a jerk. So I don't feel like I need to obey a jerk. And so we make excuses. And understand, there are times... And I think I talk about this now. Yeah, there are rare times when we are supposed to disobey, you know, direct statements that are anti-biblical. I'm down with that. I understand that. But let's be honest. The reality is that those times are few and far between. We're just looking for excuses so we don't have to do what God has told us to do. You know, I mean, we're in a free country, so we have a lot of freedom. We do. But God has told us to obey. And if things change in our country, and if we become an empire, if we become a whatever, then the weird thing is that they are an empire, and they are led by a really horrible leader, and God is still saying to obey and to submit. So I just want to throw that out there, that God is expecting us to obey, to submit to the authorities, because they're His authorities, He's using them, He wants us to obey them. And the Roman church had a great excuse, but Paul... Caesar is rough. He's not so nice. And at this time, Caesar, there's a bunch of Caesars. They all use the same name. But at this time, Caesar was pretty good. And so they would have a good excuse not to obey. They're living in Caesar's backyard. They know what's going on. And yet Paul is saying, look, you need to submit to the authorities. You need to obey. You need to submit to the authorities. You need to obey. You need to do it. And that's what God's expecting. When you look at this passage, God has put these people there. God is using these people. And God expects us to obey, to fall in line. Because disobeying is disobeying God. So I want to just throw out some ideas. Again, here's the point is that authority is God-given for our submission. But I want to just talk real quick about how do we submit? What does that look like? How do we do that? How do we know what submission means? And how can we do that today? The first thing that we can do in order to submit, okay, yes, God has chosen the authorities, He's using the authorities, and He expects me to submit to the authorities, that these white hats that are all around us. So how do we do it? The first thing is pay up. Pay up. And that's what we just read in Romans chapter 13. He says there in Romans 13, 6 to 7, and this is why you pay taxes. Because they're God's servants, and they give them their full times to govern. Give to everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If you owe revenue, then revenue. If you owe respect, pay respect. If you owe honor, then pay honor. And so he says he's expecting us to pay up. And that means paying financially. He's talking to people that I would say are far overtaxed than we were. They were far more overtaxed than we are by the things that were taken. And so he expects us to pay up. And that means to pay what you owe. And this is kind of off the subject slightly, I guess, but, you know, fudging, blurring, that's called cheating. And that's not what God has called us to do. And we know what cheating is. I use that word with my kids all the time. We play games. I'm off. That's the word that I will hone in on, because they'll be like, wait, but you said you didn't have to do it that way. How come you told me it was different? And I'll point out, well, because I was just explaining the rules, I missed that point. And I will bring up and say, that's called cheating. If you hide a card, that's cheating. And if you fail to share all the rules, that's just as much cheating. And God has said, look, these authorities are there. Pay up. Pay your taxes. If you owe taxes, pay them. If you owe revenue, pay them. The other thing he says is that we are expected to pay respect and honor. God doesn't say if. God doesn't say if they have earned your respect. If you feel that they are worthy of your honor, then you can respect and honor them. They are worthy of your honor and respect because God has placed them there. And that is enough. Therefore, we need to honor everyone that is in authority. We need to respect everyone that is in authority. We need to say the right things, the nice things. We need to support and honor the white hats. We don't have to like everything they do, but we need to honor them. And I would say there's a lot of things that we do that are dishonoring to the people that are in authority over us. And again, you know, Paul's not talking about people living in this nice little commune by themselves in the middle of nowhere. He's talking about people that are in the midst of Rome. And he says, you need to give them honor. You need to give them what they owe. Now, one of the things that I said to you is that, obviously, submission, if you're any other color hat than white, you need to submit to the leaders. And there's a lot of white hats over us. And a lot of us are wearing colored hats. But some of you also wear white hats. And this is a tough thing. Because what this means is that you, in your position of white-hattedness, in your position of leadership, of authority, God has given that to you. You didn't earn it. You didn't work that way because you are smarter, smart enough, good enough, strong enough, and doggone it, people like you. You got to that position because God has given you that authority. And that comes with it an understanding that God could also take that authority from you. So as a person in authority, and we're not going to worry about them out there. We're talking about you. If you wear a white hat in any way, shape, or form in your life, then you need to recognize that God has given you that authority and you need to use it appropriately. You need to do what God has called you to do with that. You need to submit to Him and you need to follow Him. It's a huge responsibility and we're told not to flaunt it. I mean, I try to be very real with you. I really do. People are like, this is Pastor Sean. I'm like, dude, Pastor Sean's my dad. Actually, my dad is the pastor and his name isn't Sean, but you get the idea. Just Sean is fine. I don't want to be one of those guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. I know some people are like, well, I just want them to respect you. We teach our kids. That's Mr. Gensel. That's not Kirk. If Kirk wants to call him Kirk, that's fine. But it's Mr. Gensel because it's respect. It's honor. And I appreciate that. But at the same time, you know, I know way too many people that flaunt their authority. Because I am a pastor, you realize. I am the man of God that has been chosen to lead my flock of little ones. So therefore, honor me. Pay me respect because I am awesome. At this point, I will die, right? If something falls on my head. Like, Dennis, I recognize fully. And I do not feel worthy of this position. But God has called me to this, and I need to recognize that and say, okay, I'm wearing a white hat. How am I going to use my white hat? You're wearing white hats. How are you going to use your white hats? Because we need to submit. We need to pay honor. We need to pay respect to those in authority. And if you're one of those people, you need to realize that it's not just something you need to take for granted. You need to use it the right way. The second thing is to play nice. How do you submit to authority? You play nice. In 1 Peter chapter 2, and it'll come up on the screen there. 1 Peter chapter 2 says this. Peter is writing, and he says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. So he is essentially saying the exact same thing that Paul said. This is a different guy. This is Peter writing. And the crazy thing about when Peter wrote is that at that point, Nero was the emperor. Nero was not a good Caesar. And it was interesting, Nero is not a good Caesar, and he takes the time to mention emperor. He says, we need to submit. He tells the people that he's writing to, you need to submit to the emperor, to Nero. Nero was a bad guy. Nero hated the church. He hated Christ followers so much so that he had lovely gardens. And he wanted to be able to enjoy his gardens at night, so he impaled Christians on poles and then set them on fire to light his gardens at night. Nero was a bad man. And Peter is writing to people during the reign of Nero and says, look, submit to the emperor. But that's not really my point at this point. I want to look at the next phrase. He says, for it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Let me just throw this idea out at you. By submitting to the authorities that God has put over us, you may just be a part of winning someone to Jesus. Because they, you're one of those Christians, you're those rebels, you're those people that are like that. You're those, we know what kind of church you go to. You're one of those churches. What if we were like, hey, you know what? I'm going to support everyone in authority around me. I'm going to say, you know what? I know that white hat guy is just obnoxious. But I'm going to respect them and show them love and be like Jesus to them. And maybe by doing good, you're going to silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Oh, I thought I knew about you, but the way you're responding to that. I mean, here he's talking to a guy, to a group of people in 1 Peter that are under Nero. People submitting to Nero are going to raise some eyebrows if you know that, hey, by the way, he might catch you on fire in his garden next week. By doing good, you should silence. So we need to play nice. Submitting may be what it takes to draw someone to Jesus. It may be what it takes. What is it about you? How is it you're willing to put up with this and still show honor and respect? And your response can be, because I got Jesus and it's not easy. But he has shown me that this is what I'm supposed to do. And that just might be the trigger. That might be the switch that someone needs to say, wow, I want what you've got. I'm hopeless. Life stinks. Uh-oh. And to be able to say, hey, you know what? There's nothing special about me, but there's a whole lot special about Jesus. And he's the reason that things are going. So we need to play nice. And I mean play nice. Like when it comes to authorities, there's a lot of ways. Like we can still submit. You know what I mean? And think about this with kids. We can submit on the outside but not be submitting on the inside. We can obey on the outside and not be respecting on the inside. You know, we can completely, we're not raising up arms and going and charging the Capitol, but we might just say some awful, horrendous things to people around us. And if it's respect that you owe, then you owe respect and you need to do it. We need to play nice. I guess one of the things that was frustrating to me, actually not just frustrating, heartbreaking to me last week, was that one of the most, caustic, one of the most caustic responses to the election was a prominent Christian leader. And it was just frustrating seeing the hate. And then what followed, the people that were like, oh, you're one of them. I don't want anything to do with you. And since you're one of them, that means you're connected to Jesus. And I don't want anything to do with him either. I could have been up here last week and spouting like, vote for this person because they are God's hope for the world. I realize that there's a bunch of people in this room. We probably voted a bunch of different ways. And that's okay. I still love you and God still loves you. Some of you didn't vote, and that's okay. I just want you to get, there's a lot of ways I could be caustic and negative, and you can be caustic and negative to other people about your submission. And whether it's the person you work under at work, whether it's that, you know, that parent that none of you can get along with, whether it's your authority figure, whether it's our president, whatever, there's a lot of ways that we can be obeying on the outside and just be spouting out horrendous things. And Peter's just writing, he says, play nice, because you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what that might do. But I can tell you that people were not drawn to Jesus by that Facebook post last week. I can tell you a lot of people were turned away. And so you don't know what God's going to do through you. So when it comes to submitting, just play nice. Be good. Do good things. Submit. Honor with your mouth and your actions and your attitude. The third thing that we need to do when it comes to seeing a white hat, to submitting to a white hat, is pray hard. Pray hard. 1 Timothy 2 says this: I urge you, first of all, to pray for all people. Ask God to help them. Intercede on their behalf, which means come, just kind of get in the middle there and say, hey, God, help these people out. And give thanks for them. And that's a great little phrase, right? Pray for everybody. Intercede for them. Ask God to help them. Hold hands. Sing a song. Paint rainbows. Throw glitter. Like, that's fun. We love saying that stuff. But then he goes on and says, pray this way for kings and all who are in authority. When's the last time you've prayed for that boss that you just can't stand? When's the last time you prayed for corporate? When's the last time you prayed for the mayor, the president, your pastor? Paul is writing to Timothy and says, look, pray for the leaders so that we can live peaceful and quiet lives marked by godliness and dignity. Pray hard. He says, pray for them. He says here, and this is the interesting thing, that when white hats do their job better, your life gets better. If you can help someone over you do a better job, things are going to be good for you. If we can pray for our president for the sake of our country, and I am not by any means saying that Barack Obama is the cause of every problem we have in our country. Frankly, we are the cause of every problem we have in our country, and it's called sin. But if we can pray for him to make wise choices, things are going to be good for us. Do you get that? If you can pray for your boss that you just can't stand and say, look, God, help this white hat guy. I need you to give them wisdom. Help them to make the right choices. Help them to somehow, maybe even through my response to them perhaps, come to understand the hope of Jesus. He says to pray for them, and then when we do, things will be good. I love prayer, and I say that because there are so many times and in situations in my life, especially in the lives of others, is that, you know, I can make you all stand in this room. I could say something, would you all please stand? And if I said it in front of the microphone without just telling you that I was going to do that, you probably would stand. I could do something else. I could remove all the chairs from the room, and then you would mostly be forced to stand. And then you might be like, well, I'm not going to stand because I'll just sit on the floor. Well, if we threw all the dust that was here from last week all over the floor, then you probably would stand. I can force outside things. Do you get that? I can't change your heart. I can't do it. And sometimes when situations come, I just want to. When I see the hurt, when I see the struggles that you're going through, when I see them in my own life and my own family's life, I want to go in there and just, you know, go Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, like, pull the heart out, change a little bit and throw it back in. I can't do that. But God can. And that's the thing I love about this idea. I can't change anybody. I can't change you. You can't change me. But we can pray. We can pray because God can change hearts. God can change us from the inside out. And we need to pray for our leaders. You need to pray for me. Please pray that there are so many things that could, you know how it is. So many things that can catch up leaders because leaders are leaders. And, oh, I knew that church was going to go that way eventually. And so then we're just damaging the name of Christ. I realize is such a huge deal. I'm opening the Word of God. Look at all of you. All of you are listening to me. And some of you are like nodding your head like you're actually sinking in there. That's scary. That's a big deal. Pray for me. That's a big deal. And here's the thing. I just want to throw this out. There's kind of an aside. But it's easy to refer to them. When we refer to them as, oh, the government, or those people, or those leaders, or, you know, corporate, or the white hats, or it's easy to refer to them because them are obnoxious. Them are tyrannical. Them are just up there on their high horses, just flaunting their power and authority and spitting on you and making you smell their feet after they stepped in dog poop. And them is easy to do that. It's them. That's them. But let me just tell you this. That them, it's easy to do that with them. But them are real people. Them are people with wives and husbands. Them are people with sons and daughters. They go to birthday parties. They cry when a friend dies. They're human beings with emotion. They do the normal everyday things that you and I do. They're people that are failures. They're people that are going to make mistakes just like you and I are. And so Paul writes to Timothy, look, pray for your leaders. They're everyday average Joes. They need our prayers. They're just one, you know, I'm just one stupid mistake away from drawing everybody down with me. He says we need to pray for our leaders. Them is a thing that's easy to make fun of, to talk about. We can retweet the awful things that them did. But just realize that they're real human beings. And they need our prayer. They need our leadership. One of the first things in my prayer time, and I'm not trying to flaunt how prayery I am, but after I pray for my own calloused, black heart and pray for my family, one of the first things I pray for is our elders. Because I understand that as elders, we are the leaders of this church. And that's not a joke. That's not just like, oh yeah, okay, that's cool. Like, God has chosen us and put us in this position, and so that's a big deal. So I pray for them every day. I pray for their families. Because I know chances are the mistakes that they make in church, chances are the mistakes I make in church aren't going to be as big of a deal as the mistakes that can trip me up at home. And so I just throw that out there. He says to pray. One way you can submit to the authorities over you, to submit to the white hats, is to pray for those that are in leadership and pray hard. So that's it. God has put white hats all around us, over us. How are we going to respond? He chose them. He put them in that position. He's using them in that position. And he expects us to submit. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you. Man, God, thank you. I just thank you that you are in control. That Tuesday's election, whether it was president or that guy running for that seat, or 4 years ago election, or 4 years from now, like all of it, God, is in your hands. I thank you that you appoint and direct and choose the leaders that are over us. I thank you for those of us that are in positions of leadership where we're wearing white hats, that you have given that to us. Help us to honor it, to respect you, to use it in a worthy, worthy way. But as we come across the white hats in our lives, God, help us to submit. Help us to submit, not just on the outside. Help us to obey, not just on the outside, but on the inside as well. That we would pay up and we would give honor, that we would give respect, we would give what we owe to these leaders. That you would help us to play fair, to play nice, so that maybe by submitting, someone's going to be drawn to you. And that's what it's all about. And God, I pray right now, I'm not going to ask you to help us to pray for our leaders as much as I pray for our leaders. God, give those people an authority over us, whether they're low on the totem pole like me being a dad, or someone important like the president, the chair of the United Nations. God, I pray for these people, for all the leaders in between. That you would give us wisdom, give them wisdom, and show them the way to go. And I thank you that even if the decisions aren't the way we like, even if it seems chaotic and messy and loud and noisy, you're still in control and you see a bigger picture and you're using these things for your purpose and your plan. May we submit to those that you have placed in authority over us and not fight authority.
Because God, you are the authority and you are always going to win. And I praise you for that. In Jesus' name, amen.